Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches. And that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on our social media platforms at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now Jim Andrews continues his current study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us again on The Final Word. Before we begin today's exposition, if you will go to jimandrewsbooks.com, you will discover there some articles that I produced over the years that you may find interesting and helpful. I'm just happy to share them with you for whatever benefit they may have. We continue our exposition of Paul's epistle to the Ephesians. We're currently in Ephesians chapter 5. We were last looking at verses 22 through 33, the section on domestic order. From chapter 4 through chapter 6, verse 9, the apostle is dealing with the walk of the believer. The previous section had dealt with the wealth of the believer. This particular subset of this section I call a Christian code of conduct. He comes around finally to how we must relate to one another in the home. In verse 21, he had admonished us to be subject to one another in the fear of the Lord and the reverence of Christ. Wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord. In the same way that we are to be subservient to Christ, so God has ordained that wives in the home should be subservient to their husbands. That does not imply husbands are to be tyrants or dictators, but it means that they're accountable to God for the leadership of the home. And just as all of us individually serve Christ, who is the head of the church, so the wives in the homes should be subject to their husbands, just like children are to be subject to their parents. That is God's order. He calls upon husbands and wives to be subject to one another in the very ways that the wife and the husband are most tempted not to be. And it's very hard for those under authority, whether they're men or women or children or whoever, it's just human nature and fallen human nature that we naturally resist being under the authority of another. It's the spirit of the world. Question authority. It's the spirit of feminism to resist this divine order because feminists understand it to be degrading to women. It is not any different than the Son of God, the second person of the Trinity, to subordinate himself to the Father. He is equal to the Father, but it's a voluntary agreement in the economy of the Trinity or the Godhead. Women are created with different functions than the men. They are equal in the sight of God. There is neither male nor female. But equality in worth does not mean sameness in function. And God has ordained that the wife in the smallest unit of society, the home, should be subordinate to the husband, meaning that the husband is accountable before God for the home. We explained earlier that that's why we see in Genesis, even though Eve was the one who took the initiative in sinning when she was seduced by the tempter, Adam is the one most held responsible. Folks, any time we default on God's way in marriage, we mess up the model. We get on a page that is not healthy for the home. And that's a point where biblical Christianity, and I do emphasize biblical Christianity, is very radical and countercultural in terms of modern ways and sensibilities. Our way is the polar opposite of feminist thinking. They get red with rage, we said, at the very thought of a man in charge of a home, because that modern thinking tends to rule the cultural roost at the present time. It's no wonder we mentioned in our last study that men have been neutered. So many men are totally confused as to their role in the home, and many have turned passive-aggressive in many cases, and pretty much checked out of and abdicated their domestic responsibility. insistence on leveling the husband in the domestic scheme of things means that what most women are getting at the altar these days is a male, not regularly a man, and there's a big difference. He explains the role of the wife in marriage on the analogy of the role of the church to Christ. Wives, be subject to your own husbands as to the Lord, for the husband is the head of the wife, in the same way that Christ is the head of the church. Christ is the Savior of the body, meaning the church, which is called his body. But as the church is subject to Christ, so also the wives ought to be subject to their husbands in everything. And everything, of course, is qualified by the totality of biblical revelation and New Testament teaching. And everything does not mean when the husband might require the wife something that is clearly contrary to the will of God and to the law of God. Now, verse 25, husbands, love your wives. This loving her, as we immediately see, is not just a way of feeling. It doesn't exclude that. But it's a way of behaving, and Christ is the model for that behavior. The husband is directed to be a servant to his wife at the very point where persons in authority are least likely to show up for work. Husbands, though he doesn't express it on the analogy of the wife, husbands are to be servants toward their wives by loving them, not tyrannizing them, not running roughshod over them, not acting like a petty-handed woman, just shut up and do what I say, domestic dictator. That is not at all the spirit of Scriptures. Way back in Genesis, just after the fall, God anticipated the tension that would ever after follow fallen man in his marital relations. The woman's desire, God said, would be for her husband. Now that phraseology, as we know from what God later said to Cain, where you have analogous phraseology, it meant, I believe, that instead of being dutifully compliant with her husband's direction as a regular matter, that is, being a servant, the woman's desire for her husband would be that she would be restive under man's authority and would seek to master him. Oftentimes, that is by simple but artful manipulation. You remember how Samson's woman, Delilah, managed to control him by badgering him to the point of death. Or in more extreme cases, she resisted by insubordination, an insubordination that just wears a man down into passive aggressiveness. As for the fallen man, male, his tendency would be to put aside a servant's spirit in leading his wife with love. And that would take the form of being domineering. He shall rule over you. The point of that expression, he shall rule over you, is not simply to declare the post-fall domestic order, but this is the fallout or the consequence of the fall of man. The man shall rule you. That will be, on the male side, the oppressive outcome of Mother Eve's initiative in the equation of original sin. Men, listen to me. Paul does not say to us, guys, rule your wife. He says to us, men, love your wives. Hear me. Headship in the Christian scheme of things is a given. What Christian husbands need to be reminded of is that headship over a wife should not be turned into a hardship. The point is that domestic authority should be exercised in love, sacrificial benevolence toward the wife as Christ exhibited toward the church. So for an incentive and a model, the apostle points out here in Ephesians 5:18, 22 and following, that Christ's relationship to the church follows that servant model. Christ did not and does not domineer the church. There's nothing selfish in Christ's headship over the church. Christ's headship is exercised in love. And that love is not just an abstraction. That love is not merely an affection. The love of Christ for the church is a concrete display of the most incomparable benevolence toward the church. Christ gave himself for the church. Christ was and remains a servant to the church's best interest. Christ's whole idea, Paul says, was to perfect the church. and to purify the church so that the church might be all that Christ intended in glory. By analogy, let the husband then exercise his God-given authority over the wife with similar love and similar intent. What's that? That he might build up his wife, not tear her down, that he might exercise his authority in a way that his wife might grow in grace and not be torn down by grinding, domineering on his part. Think about it. How does a husband love and care for himself? Paul says, well then, just as the church is the body of Christ, so let the husband consider that his wife is his own body and treat her with the same love, the same benevolence, the same goodness, the same faithfulness that he has for himself. And as the church is arranged under Christ, let Christian wives get in line and arrange themselves under their husbands. So who are we going to follow, friends? Are we going to follow the culture? Are we going to follow Christ? Well, there are many out there who have imbibed deeply. You've come to Christ, you know Christ, you are a child of God. But what you don't always realize, my friends, is that men and women both have imbibed deeply, not only of the flesh, but of the culture. And we've heard it so much that we get inured to it. And consequently, our homes are on tilt. We follow the culture instead of the principles of Christ. What he's outlined here in chapter 5, verses 22, to the end of the chapter, is how we serve one another in marriage. Listen to me, dear people. Most marriage fractures could be fixed almost overnight if both, and I do underscore both, partners would adopt this rule. Pride and selfishness is the big wedge between most struggling couples. Many of the things that they talk about are just the superficial things. It gets down to this: pride and selfishness. I say to you, my friends, and of course I'm not speaking to everyone who has a marital problem, because there are some of you out there who on your side have done the very best you can, and you're still doing that, and you're trying to honor Christ. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to those who have great marital fissures, and both of you are a can of worms. Get over yourselves. Get under the rule of Christ. Follow this domestic order. That means you put yourself under God's domestic arrangement, and you follow this analogy. Wives, you place yourself under your husband's authority the way you place yourself under Christ. Chances are, if you don't do that, you're not even being a servant to Christ. You're not even being submissive to him. You can't do one without the other. But there's that analogy. Get it. See it. Do it. But husbands, don't think that gives you the liberty now to become the local tyrant in your home, to be the big domestic boss and going around calling all the shots. Woman, listen to me. No, you love your wife. You treat your wife like Christ treated the church. Get up each day, folks, and knock yourselves out trying to please one another, not yourselves. I'm telling you, that would stop most of your marital issues right in their tracks. You're running out here going to counselors, spending all this kind of money. I'm telling you, most of you don't need a counselor. All you need to do, two of you, is just sit down and say, listen, I'm going to stop being prideful and I'm going to stop serving myself. Let's agree right now. We'll make mistakes. We'll back up and start over when we do. But we will serve one another. I will serve you, the wife will say, by being under your authority. You're responsible for this home, and I will treat you like that. We expect the children to be submissive to us. I will be submissive to you. The husband will say, and I will not be a tyrant. I will not be a domestic dictator. I will do all that I do like Christ. I will do it in your interest. I will seek your interest first. I will seek the kids' interest first, just as Christ sought our interest first. On that analogy, you will serve one another. Ask your partner if you don't know what you need to fix. Just sit down, dear. Listen, what would make you happy with me? Both of you ask that question. Ask them how you need to adjust to optimize their happiness with you. Get specifics and then go for it. Yes, you'll make some missteps. You didn't get in this shape in a day and you won't get out of it in a day, but you'll put things on a different track in a day. If both of you will just start right there. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 21. Be subject to one another in the reverence for the Lord. You live before the Lord. You are the Lord's. Revere him and get on his plan. Wives, be subject to your husbands as to the Lord. And husbands, love your wives. That's not just talking about feelings. It's talking about behavior. The way Christ loved the church. How did he do that? He gave himself up for her. And he gave himself up for the church that he might present to himself the church in all her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she should be holy and blameless. Well, so, husbands, guys, you ought to love your wives along that same analogy, seeking their absolute spiritual best in accordance with what Christ is seeking for the church. And if you love your wife, you love yourself, for God has made you one flesh. No one ever hated his own flesh. But what do you do? Well, what do you do when you love the body? You nourish it. You cherish it. Just as Christ does the church, you do the same for your wife, because we are members of his body. So this is a sacred thing that you're dealing with. If the two of you would just sit down and do that honestly, there's no reason on planet Earth, no reason why you can't have a healthy, harmonious marital relationship that will honor Christ and be a blessing to each of you. But it takes two. In this spirit, I tell you, I've said it so often, people sometimes start when I say it. Marriage is not hard. It's hard if you make it hard. It's hard if you get off of God's plan. Without staying on God's plan, sure, marriage can be a pain, if not a disaster. Folks, this marriage thing is not neurosurgery. A relative of mine laughingly said to me in the presence of his loyal wife, I'll call her Mary, it wasn't Mary, Mary always has to do things the hard way. Always. I can't understand it. She can make the simplest jobs twice or three times as difficult. Well, that's exactly what many do with marriage. They just go out. You may be one of them. They take something that is really easy and wonderful and make it terribly hard to hold together. Why? Because they're trying to find unity and harmony against the centrifugal forces of selfishness and pride. Get over yourselves. Me first only gets to discord first. If you're a selfish person in marriage, let me tell you something. Just because your spouse doesn't rise up in insurrection and badmouth you in public, don't think for a minute they're okay with that. They may help you put up a good front, but underneath, they know you're a jerk, but worse, the Lord does. And I tell you, husband or wife, whichever one or both, God will hold you accountable for your me-first ways. I say for the third or fourth time, get over yourself and be a servant. When Paul says this mystery is great, he's talking about with reference to Christ and the church. Nevertheless, he says, let each individual among you also love his own wife even as himself, just as Christ did, and let the wife see to it that she respect, that she reverence her husband. That's God's plan. You do it your way, and you'll get your own results, and they will not be good. Do it God's way, and things will work out so that you understand that marriage is truly the best state to live in. I have to say, dear friends, I just marvel at how hard we make the home, how hard we work, it seems, at just screwing things up. I see it all the time. I have seen really difficult things in marriage. I mean, I see people who never expected one partner to be disabled or to be ill. Diseases, either mental or physical, show up that nobody ever expected, and those things can make being married really difficult. But in the normal course of things, barring things like that, marriage doesn't have to be difficult. Aussie and I have had our bad moments and our bad days, and we've experienced some very hard things, and still are. But I wouldn't trade being married to her for anything in the world. And I'm sure she would tell you the same thing. I've always said I don't think that in most ways I'm a necessarily easy person to be married to. I'm passionate, I'm high-strung, I'm opinionated, I'm hard-driving. But you know, one thing but I'm not. And when I say I'm not, I mean relatively. And the same is true of her. Neither of us are selfish beings as we generally think of selfish. We both want to please the other. We just do. And we try to please the other. Now, there have been moments, let's be real here, there have been moments when I'm all amped up about something and I said something or did something and I really wasn't at that moment trying to please her. I'm not talking about a perfect score, but she scores an A on that, and I think, on balance, I score an A. To get an A, you can be 94%, and that's about the way it is. I don't recommend taking the other 6% lightly. But I'm just telling you, if we learn to serve one another, if we get serious about that, married life can really even out. But so many husbands and wives are in competition for who's going to be in charge of war, just to make sure that you're not running me, or to make sure that you know who's boss around here. And those are idiot games, and they get idiot results. If we relate like fools, we will act like fools, and we'll get foolish outcomes. So I say to any of you out there that even if just one of you, even if just one of you will, despite what the other does, for reverence for Christ, for the glory of God, if you will just make it your business to just be a servant to the other, it will not necessarily heal your marriage, but your home will be much less of a battleground in most cases than it otherwise would be. And who knows, by the grace of God, if you, just you, will take the initiative and by God's grace say, well, I'm going to do things the way God ordered. She may not or he may not, but I'm, by the grace of God, going to honor Christ. I'm going to be obedient to God, and I'm going to do the best I know how. And I know that in the end I'll have my reward, even if it's not fulfilling or satisfactory right now. Your home will, in most cases, be a better place than a worse place. Your marriage will be less fractious. Your marriage will be less torturous than it would be than if you and your husband get locked in these pride battles and playing these selfishness games and just going at each other, trying to one-up one another. That is horrible. It's terrible to come home to four walls where there is only fractiousness and there's only contention and there's only anger and resentment and games playing. It doesn't have to be that way. And two people, two Christian people, can sit down and change that in a day. I don't mean get your steps right in a day when you've taken wrong steps for so long, but you can make that resolution in a day, and you can get the patterns changed, and Christ will be honored. And my, not only will you be more fulfilled in doing things God's way, but just think of the children. So many children are getting bent out of shape, they're getting twisted, they're getting tortured, just because of the wars and rumors of wars going on in the home. And they just put their hands over their ears and stop the fighting. Will you all please shut up? That's terrible. And then they go out and they emulate what they know. You're the example they have. And as much as they try, they can't help in most cases but fall into the same habits. They don't even want to get married. They'll just go out and maybe shack up with somebody else, because they saw that marriage wasn't all that great. Look at the example they have. We drive them right into the arms of devil. We drive them right into the arms of temptation by the ways that we carry on. Well, dear friends, thank you for joining us on The Final Word. God bless you and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. Our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program has ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.